Hello there. Welcome to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Swanik Jacobmar, and I started Pathfinder 101 with the intention of examining various professions beyond the basics by interacting with experienced professionals from various careers. This blog and podcast are from a high schooler's point of view, so I hope you benefit from some of the information provided in the various blogs and interviews. Developing a product or service is one thing, but if your business doesn't attract enough customers, staying afloat becomes a challenge. That is where marketing and specifically advertising could make potential customers aware of your company products and services. Every time an ad catches your eye on TV or on some social media application, you are witnessing the outcome of a marketing or advertising expert. Marketers and advertisers specialize in strategies and techniques to attract customers to a business. Today, we'll be talking with Mr. Case Phillips, founder and partner of RBA, an advertising agency in Dallas, Texas. He has worked as a copywriter and even started his own app development company prior to forming RBA. RBA has helped advertise for companies such as Golden Chick, Fletcher's Corn Dogs, Grayson Whiskey, and more. We will be hearing about why he chose to found a startup and the journey he took to where he is today. Mr. Phillips, thanks for joining me today to talk about the various factors that influenced your career.
Hey, call me Case, please.
All right. As a high school student, understanding various professions and career paths seems to be a daunting task because there are so many different choices available. Even if we hear about something, the exposure we get to these is very limited. And I would like to take you back to your high school days. When you were thinking about college, your career, I'm assuming that you started like me with a lot of confusion and uncertainty in choosing the right path. And after a few years, now you own a successful business. And I'm sure you learned a lot during this year.
So yep.
I'm trying to gain an understanding of me and the lessons you learned to help me as well as the readers of the blog to gain a better understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Ready to revisit my high school years and see if I can impart any knowledge.
All right. So these first few questions are about the beginning. So when you were in high school, did you know what kind of career you wanted to venture into? What did you want to become when you're a kid or a high school student?
Yeah. So I guess when I was a kid, I had very lofty ambitions of playing professional baseball or professional football. And then I stopped growing in like fifth grade or sixth grade when I was like 5'9". And so professional football was probably not going to happen, although I did enjoy my time playing football and baseball at St. Mark's. But no, actually, I for a very long time in like middle and high school, I wanted to be a sports agent. Is what I wanted to do. There was a show on HBO called Arliss, and it was all about Arliss Michaels, who was a sports agent, and it was, you know, comedy and whatever. And yeah, that's what I thought I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to go into sports business, and I can't remember why that track kind of, I think, you know, when I was growing up, you know, sports agents were typically guys who, you know, we're friends with some athletes in college and, you know, they needed somebody to represent them and help them through it. Someone like a business mind and a business acumen. And then, you know, as we kind of hit the turn of the century and then beyond that, sports agents really became basically attorneys, who specialized in sports. And so, law school was something that I had considered for a time. And then ultimately, you know, I liked everything about school except for homework. And so, I decided at some point that I did not want to go to, you know, three more years of school than I already had to. And so becoming a lawyer or getting a law degree to become a sports agent was not something I wanted to pursue anymore. And then after that, I decided I wanted to go in the music business. And that's really what I thought I was going to do. And music was and still is a huge passion of mine. I play music. I go to live concerts, you know, as much as I can, less now with two kids, but certainly as much as I can. I always knew that I wasn't talented enough to be on the performance side of the music business, but I really wanted to go into A&R, like artist and repertoire, recruiting bands and stuff like that, and being a talent scout or managing bands, things like that. And I actually did pursue that for quite a time. In college, had several internships at different record labels and things like that, and ultimately decided that also was not my path. So it's kind of the two sort of paths that I wanted to get into that just didn't really happen for various reasons. But yeah, and then I ended up in advertising. So
could you describe your journey into advertising? Like,
yeah. So, yeah, I had, a couple internships with record labels in college, which were really fun, and learned a ton. And really, I think what I was tasked with, other than kind of administrative type work, but I was doing a lot of marketing work in those internships for musicians. And this was, the mid 2000s. So kind of the early days of the social internet, for sure. Web 2.0, I think, is as we call it. So, we were doing a lot of kind of grassroots marketing, guerrilla marketing, and on, music message boards and posting in there and helping them out with Facebook. And at that point, Instagram wasn't even around yet. I think we were working on MySpace a little bit even. So really kind of, I think, got my toes wet in marketing at that point. And really at that point too, it was like, oh, well, here's a 20-year-old kid. He probably knows something about Facebook. And it was like, that was kind of the whole strategy, right? It was a different time for sure. And I think at some point, just in talking with some of my mentors in the music business, people I'd worked for, I kind of came to realize, I knew the music business was undergoing a huge shift, right? That was, a few years after, the kind of MP3 revolution came about, and iPods were, a huge thing, and streaming wasn't even a question yet, but everybody kind of knew already that the music business was undergoing a dramatic shift. Record sales were down, and that musicians and record labels really, especially, we're going to have to find new revenue streams in order to even survive. And what I really realized is, that was going to be really difficult. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be a part of an industry with that much uncertainty. Also, I kind of realized that the music business, because it's a fun industry and a lot of people want to go into it, is that even if you are successful, oftentimes can take a very long time to make any sort of meaningful money. And believe me, money is not everything in a job, but, I didn't want to be stuck making $40,000 until I was, 35 years old. So, that was another reason why I kind of stopped pursuing music. And, you'll find a common theme here. There was actually another TV show that was on, and I was a creative writing major in college. So I already knew I loved to write and writing songs, poetry, whatever. I kind of had this, enjoyment for marketing. And there was a TV show that came on, I think it was on TNT, and it was called Trust Me. And it was about two guys working in a Chicago ad agency. And this is probably around 2007 or 8 or so. So I think that show lasted 12 episodes, maybe 15 episodes. It wasn't very long. And actually, a funny thing about that show is Craig Zisk, who's a St. Mark's alumni, like class of, I want to say like 85, 83, something like that. He's been very successful in Hollywood and writing TV shows and stuff. He was actually one of the producers and writers of that show. And I reached out to him at one point asking where I could find it. This is like 2 or 3 years ago, asking him where I could find it online. And he was like, I don't know. And he's like, I don't even know if I can find a copy of it. If I do, I'll send it to you. And I never got it. But I found, I watched the show. I loved it. And saw this team of an art director and a copywriter and an ad agency, and saw how they worked and how they brainstormed and came up with ideas and how the writer worked. And I said, I would love to do that. I would love to become a copywriter. So that was kind of where I started dipping my toes in the advertising business. And that was pretty close to when I was graduating from college. And at that point, I started pursuing jobs and internships with various agencies and creative type companies back here in Dallas. So,
and what made you to choose to start your own company over joining another company?
Well, sometimes I wonder that myself. My career kind of, I was kind of a late bloomer in my career. Really, I think my first few jobs, I worked as a copywriter at an experiential agency. My first job out of school. And then I went to a music startup, kind of back in the music thing, but working in a marketing capacity for there. Our startup ran out of funding. And then from there, I started my own app company. We've built and developed an app called Hookbook that was like, we called it personal relationship management. So like CRM, but for your personal life. That did okay for a while, and then eventually wasn't sustainable anymore. And then I went and worked for another ad agency here in Dallas called Cannonball, and I was there for about 5 years. And I'd kind of grown a little bit disillusioned with, you know, kind of the way things were going, my trajectory there. And it so happened that a few weeks before kind of this light bulb moment for me, I had met with a fellow marksman named Ross Cromarty, who was a year above me. He had run at that point a video production company, and I was reaching out to him because I wanted my current agency to be working in more video content production. And again, this was, you know, not even 6 years ago, but it's really crazy how much things have changed. Like, from going from a point where, like, we weren't doing a lot of video, but we thought we needed to be doing it for our clients, to where now it's like, if you're not producing video content for your clients are not producing video content somewhere else, like, what are you doing? Right. So, but anyway, so that happened. And then I saw Ross post on Facebook a few weeks later. He said, "Hey, just sold my company. Like, stay tuned for what's next," or something like that. And so I texted Ross and said, "Hey, you know, what happened? You know, blah, blah, blah." And he said, "Let's meet up for some beers." So we went to Braindead Brewing and met up for some beers, and kind of that evolved into another conversation after that. And there was already a couple other folks on board. And Ross said, "You know, really want to start this thing, and would love for you to be a part of it." And so that's kind of where we went. I was at that time interviewing with, you know, established companies already. I was also offered a position at another agency that was also kind of starting up at that point as well. But ultimately, I think, you know, my dad was an entrepreneur. He, you know, owned various restaurants and had a coffee brand at one point, and you know, always was kind of, you know, he was a self-made man and a small businessman, and you know, just always, you know, kind of trying to find the next cool concept or next thing that he could start. And so I think that's just, yeah, I don't know if it was that I, you know, idolized my dad, which I certainly did, or that, you know, entrepreneurship is a genetic thing, which it might be. Although my older brother, who also went to St. Mark's, is like complete opposite. Like, he worked for Southwest Airlines, and now he works for Expedia. And so he works for like giant corporations. But yeah, I don't know. I just saw that and kind of always, I don't know. I think that's just how I always envisioned myself, was like working at small companies and trying to grow them versus, you know, kind of going to something established and being just like a cog in the wheel, so to speak. So I think I was kind of destined for starting my own company and entrepreneurship, you know, kind of from the get-go.
And taking a little step back in college, or before even college, like, what were the factors you considered when you were choosing a college, and especially your major? You said you were a creative writing major.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. So I would say my experience in choosing colleges was a little bit atypical for most marksmen. I was kind of the guy that colleges hate to see, like high SAT and ACT scores and not a great GPA. I, you know, as I mentioned earlier, school was never really like my favorite thing. And so kind of messed around a lot in school, and yeah, it just wasn't that important to me. And so, you know, I was always looking at big state schools is where I wanted to go. And, you know, not only just from a kind of academic reason, you know, I never had ambitions or obviously couldn't get into any Ivy League schools or anything like that. But also I was a 12-year guy at St. Mark's. And before that, I went to a small, you know, private preschool here in Dallas, and just like always had this feeling of being in this really small community and everybody always knowing what was going on with you and everybody knew who you were or whatever. And so I really wanted to kind of escape that and go to a giant school where like people didn't really know you and you could kind of do your own thing and, you know, whatever. So I kind of wanted to, as much as I loved my St. Mark's experience and still look back on it with incredible fondness, I wanted almost something that was like the complete opposite of that, because I had done it for so long. So I applied to, I don't know, 7 or 8 different big state schools, you know, Texas, Colorado, Georgia, Kansas, Tennessee, LSU. And I got into all of them except for Texas. And I ended up deciding to go to Arizona State. I had a really good friend of mine. He's still one of my best friends. He went to Green Hill. Our parents were really good friends. And we, you know, obviously in high school at the, you know, rivalry or whatever, but you know, he and I had always said, wouldn't it be fun to go to college together? And so we did that. He and I went to ASU together and kind of started our our life there. So that's how I chose college. And I can, you know, I don't know if this is appropriate, but I remember touring ASU with my dad. And I remember seeing like four girls out on like the quad and bikinis, like sunbathing or whatever. And I was like, man, this seems like the place for me. So yeah, went there, had a great time. And I did learn a lot. It was a great school to go to, a very different experience than St. Mark's, both from like just a size of the campus to also just getting exposed to a lot of different people from different backgrounds, different socioeconomic backgrounds, which I thought was really valuable too. And then as far as my major, you'll kind of again sense the theme here, I was undeclared, I think up until my junior year. I started out with I wanted to be a business major is what I thought. And then I did not do so well in my Econ 101 class. And then decided, well, maybe business isn't for me. And had always had a knack for writing. In my English classes that I had taken so far at ASU, I'd, you know, gotten, you know, A's, A pluses in all of them. And you won't probably realize it until you go to college how much of a great foundation that St. Mark's lays for writing, but it really is incredible. Just amazing teachers there, Mr. Gunnan, Ms. Mailer, Ms. Trice, Mr. Perryman, just great, great, great teachers who helped me with my writing. So I'd always done really well in English, and I went to, you know, my guidance counselor or whatever they're called at ASU, and she was like, well, I think it's time for you to declare a major. And I said, well, what can we do in English? Cause I didn't want to become like a English lit major. I like reading, but I read a lot of like nonfiction stuff. I don't, you know, want to read a lot of literature. And so she said, well, there's a creative writing path. And I was like, well, that sounds fun. That sounds cool. And so I did it. Not really thinking about a career at the time. It was just more of like, what do I enjoy to do? What do I like doing? And I loved it. I loved my creative writing classes. They were so much fun. I got to meet a lot of really cool people, a lot of cool creative thinkers. And that was something I think I loved as well, because at St. Mark's, while there's a huge emphasis on writing and being a great writer, not a lot of it is on creative writing. And so it was kind of cool to be able to like bust out of that shell and do things that I already love to do just on my own, not even in a school capacity, but like, hey, this is actually my homework and I love doing it. And, you know, I get graded on this stuff that I love to do. So for me, it was kind of a perfect major to go into, and really glad that I did it.
And I'm sure like most people, you were like pretty skeptical. You mentioned like some changes in your journey. So how did sort of like everything fall to place? How did you overcome your doubts or your hesitation?
It's a great question. And I think the answer is you never really overcome your doubts and hesitations. Yeah, I think even the most successful people in the world will tell you that they are still trying to figure some things out, still, you know, have doubts about their capabilities and their skill sets and all that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, I really take the approach of, you know, kind of never being a completed project, and that, you know, you're trying to learn something new every single day and teach something to somebody else every single day, because teaching helps you learn it even better. So I think that if you're ever like satisfied to where like you're like, I've removed all doubt about my career and myself and my family, and I've removed all hesitation about all that stuff, then you're probably no longer growing and improving. And so I think that you should always be looking to improve, always be looking to get better at something. And I think a lot of that comes from just, you know, I think people, like, nobody really has it all figured out. I don't really know how else to describe it. I think you'll get to a point, I don't know how old you are now, but, you know, I think when you're 18 years old, you think, man, I know everything there is to know in this world. I've got it figured out, you know, senior in high school, and, you know, I'm, you know, about to go off to college and all this stuff. I've got it figured out. And then you kind of get to college a couple years later, and like, man, I didn't really know anything when I was 18, but now I've really got it all figured out. And then you graduate college. And then for me, this epiphany happened at 25. And I was like, man, at 22, I thought I knew everything, and I really don't know anything now. So like, maybe this is just always going to perpetually happen. And so it kind of does, you know, when I look back at like, you know, things I thought I was good at when I was 25 or 28 years old, or things I thought that I could do. And I look back and almost like, you're kind of embarrassed about like, man, I didn't really know anything then. And yeah, I'm 35 now. And I'm sure when I'm 45, I'll look back at, you know, the way that I approach business, the way that we're doing things now in our company and look back and be like, man, we didn't know anything then. Because I know that looking at where we started in 2016 and where we are today, we're two very different companies. And, you know, in 2016, we were like, man, we're doing great and this is awesome or whatever. And then looking back and I'm like, man, we didn't know anything. Like, how did people trust us with their money and all this kind of stuff? So I think it's just, there's just a constant desire to improve and know that you need to focus on today, but that the future, in the future, you will look back on who you were today and, you know, I don't want to say be ashamed or embarrassed, but you'll just look back and know that that person, you know, wasn't as smart as the person you are today. And so I think that doubt and hesitation kind of always lives there and always kind of feeds some of the hunger as well.
So being the person you are today, and given your current exposure to various fields and knowledge, what are some things that you would change or do differently if you went back in time? What are some important skills that you think you would have liked to have developed before you joined college or anything like that?
Before college?
Yeah.
Skills before college. I think looking back, I look back at like things that I didn't care about in high school and things that I'm interested in now, like take, you know, like history, for example. Like I'm like a big reader of, you know, history and things like that, and, you know, World War II and things, subjects that I just didn't really care about in high school that I'm like, man, I wish I could go back and like sit in on a history class and like, I'd be really into it now. And back then it was just like, all right, I got to do this to, you know, write a paper and, you know, get a grade. I don't know about skill sets. It's hard to put my mind like back in that time frame. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't know what a skill set I think thinking about today's high schoolers, I think that you're growing up in a world that's extreme. Like it wasn't that long ago that I was in high school, but it's extremely different. I was kind of the last generation that sort of grew up in my early years without the internet or without really like the real internet. And then by the time like high school came around, like things were starting to get kind of crazy in the internet world and the digital space. So I kind of experienced both those worlds and, you know, you're 100% digitally native. I mean, you've never known anything but, you know, being connected all the time and screens. And so I think with that, I mean, I would say that today, like having, not everybody needs to be a programmer for sure, but having some knowledge, no matter what field you're in, I think having some knowledge of coding and you know, different frameworks for building websites, building applications, and just kind of understanding what's involved in that. Certainly if you want to, you know, become a programmer or software engineer, that's great. But I think just having understanding of how all that ecosystem works, I think is obviously super important, whether you're in real estate or law or marketing, or you want to become a doctor. I think those things are really fundamental to success, you know, kind of moving forward for someone in high school today.
All right. And earlier you were mentioning that your dad was a small business owner in the area and that he was your idol that inspired you to sort of take on your own business. And other than your parents, were there any other mentors that you looked up to that you tried to emulate?
Like in high school?
Anytime, high school, college, or beyond.
Yeah. So Ray Dalio is someone today that I'm kind of a disciple of his. Not actually, I don't know him at all, but I love reading his stuff. His book Principles was a big kind of game changer for me, just kind of shifting how my mind works and how I think about things. There's a guy, Drew McClellan, who runs a group called the Agency Management Institute, who's become a mentor of mine. A woman in Toronto who's an agency owner, a bigger agency than ours, named Shannon Ballard, who's become a great mentor of mine. Just kind of, you know, she's probably 8 or 10 years older than me and, you know, been doing it a little bit longer and runs a little bit bigger of a company. And so she's just been super helpful and, you know, being able to bounce ideas off of and, you know, meeting once a month to talk through just frustrations of, you know, owning an agency and, you know, HR issues or process issues or project management issues or client issues, things like that. And so she's been a great sounding board. I think like outside of kind of people that I know, other business leaders I've looked up to, certainly look up to Wieden Kennedy, which is an agency out of Portland, is somebody who's really kind of doing it right and done it well. The Martin Agency in in Richmond, Virginia is another agency that we really look up to as far as kind of somebody who's, you know, again, two independent agencies that have grown from the ground up and, you know, without, you know, the help of, you know, big conglomerate money or anything like that. And just by, you know, treating clients right and doing great work and developing great insights and putting those to use for their clients. So really looking up to them. And certainly Ogilvy, who's kind of the godfather of modern advertising. I read a lot of his stuff, and CM is somebody who was a pioneer in our industry in the, you know, 50s and 60s. And he really kind of, you know, pioneered the way for what we're all doing today. And a lot of the things that he believed, a lot of the things that he taught were, are still very applicable to today's world, even though it's a very, very different landscape than the one that he was working in.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit to more about your job. So what does a typical day or week look like for you? What responsibilities do you have as co-founder of RBA? And could you also briefly outline the goals of your organization?
Yeah, so I would say my typical day, I spend about half my time working in the business, half my time working on the business. And so working in the business is, you know, status meetings with clients, reviewing creative that we're doing, you know, some project management kind of stuff, making sure that everybody's organized via, you know, in-person connections or, you know, when on our remote days via Slack. And then a lot of business development as well. So going out and trying to, you know, find new clients, take, you know, go to lunches, go to meetings, things like that, and trying to bring in business, putting together proposals, pitching those, et cetera. And so that's really kind of, I would say, in my role, like my number one responsibility, and I think the responsibility of any partner in any business is to generate revenue. And so, you know, if you're not bringing money, then, you know, what are you doing as a partner? So that's kind of my number one responsibility. And then working on the business. So, you know, we have weekly leadership meetings where we discuss all kinds of issues that need to be resolved, everything from, again, like process things to HR issues to finances. You know, how do we make our organization better? How do we, you know, market it better? How do we position ourselves better? Things like that. Some more big picture items. And certainly as our company's grown, you know, I was working, you know, maybe 90-10 in the business and on the business. And now it's about 50-50. And, you know, certainly we hope to get to a place here in the next couple of years where, you know, I'm able to devote, you know, 95% of my time to working on the business and doing things that are, you know, highest and best use for me, and as well as Ross, my partner. We're both kind of in the same boat there. So that's kind of my day-to-day. Again, I work on the account side of things. So a lot of, you know, client relationships and things like that. The goals of our organization. So our goal is to grow. And then really to do, you know, the best work we can for our clients and help them generate more leads, more customers, more revenue, whatever their KPIs are that we're trying to achieve. And so that helps them grow. It helps us grow. And yeah, we're just looking to our kind of founding statement is to help good people do great things. And so, you know, whether that's our employees, helping them achieve what they want to achieve, either monetarily, career goals, things like that. We're a very kind of culture first organization. We've won, you know, been fortunate to win several awards, you know, whether it's Dallas Business Journal or Ad Age magazine for top workplaces. So that's something that's really important to us. And then also helping our clients, you know, so, you know, a lot of, you know, we are a B2B company, but I never really like, the term business to business because it's always people working with people. And so, you know, Golden Chick may be our client, but really our clients are the people that we interact with and work with every day. So we can help them be better at their jobs, to get promoted, to, you know, achieve things that they want to do within their careers. You know, that's kind of the ultimate for us is, you know, hey, such and such got promoted because, you know, she did such a great job of, you know, in her role, and we helped her with that. And so I think that's a big part of what we're trying to achieve as well.
What is your favorite thing about your job, and what do you least like about your job? And also sort of off of that, how do you maintain a work-life balance? Or if you don't, what is your take on that concept?
Yeah, I love the second question. The first question, what was the first question?
What do you like most and least about your
Most and least. As far as the actual work, business development is definitely kind of where I like to sit. And really is kind of where I thrive as well. I'm definitely more of a relationship kind of person. I like the thrill of I'm a very competitive person. So I like the thrill of, hey, you know, we've got an opportunity, clients, you know, putting us up against two other agencies. We've got to put together a deck, we've got to put together a pitch, we've got to put together a presentation, going out and pitching it, and, you know, hopefully ultimately winning the business. To me, that's kind of the biggest thrill that I get is knowing that I've developed a relationship and I've developed the trust and earned the trust of somebody to have them have us help them grow their business. So that's probably my favorite part of my job. My least favorite part of my job is anything very detail oriented. Not really my strong suit for sure. Like day-to-day management of clients, not my favorite thing to do. Any sort of project management type stuff, not my favorite thing to do. Things that I've had to do a lot of along the way. And luckily now I'm kind of in a position where I don't have to do a ton of that anymore. And learning all that along the way has been very helpful. But at this point, I just know that, A, it's not where I'm, you know, best served, and also just not what I love to do. Work-life balance. So a good buddy of mine, Nick Casavecchia, who's at St. Mark's alum as well, he's in my grade. I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, but he kind of, he told me one time, he's like, I hate the term work-life balance because he's like, my life is my work and my work is my life. And they're kind of intermingled with each other. Not in a way that like you're always working or you're always living, but it's just, you know, and he's an entrepreneur as well. He's got a small real estate investment company and he's done very well. But, you know, he kind of approaches it, which is it kind of articulated for me how I kind of approach things as well. But he kind of articulates as, you know, I may be, you know, with my son, Jack, and, you know, we're playing and I might be thinking in my head about, you know, some investment deal or whatever he's doing. And he's thinking about that and, you know, they're playing or whatever, playing catch in the backyard and having a great time. But he's kind of thinking about that. But then maybe other times when he's like at the office, maybe he's thinking about like, man, like, you know, what should I get Jack for his birthday or, you know, whatever. But it's kind of all very integrated. And so, especially in today's digital world, there's no like kind of fine line. So, I think today, and especially since COVID, things have become a lot more flexible to where you don't have to necessarily work 9 to 5 Monday through Friday to be successful. So a lot of times, you know, I will work really Monday through Thursday, you know, and I'll work a pretty standard kind of 9 to 5 day. I'll go home, I'll do dinner with my family, I'll, you know, bathe my kids, you know, put them to sleep, et cetera. And then at 8 o'clock or so, you know, I might be working again just because, not really, sometimes because I have to, but a lot of times just because it's a good time for me to get things done. It's quiet. You know, my wife's in bed and she's watching the TV or she might be working also, but it's quiet. There's not a lot of distractions. I don't have people asking me 1,000 questions. It's a good time to think creatively or to really kind of think strategically about the work that I'm trying to do. So I kind of see work and life as sort of this kind of commingled thing. But on the other hand, I do think kind of in the strictest sense of work-life balance, I think it's never good to work too much. You'll burn yourself out really quickly. I was really struggling. My daughter was born in November of 2020. Time's just really been crazy. Like, with COVID and everything, I'm like, wait, when was that? You know, was that 3 years ago? Was that last month? My daughter was born in November of 2020. And, you know, we had 2 kids and I was working a ton. And it was just like, I was really just like, man, like I have no time for myself, like zero time. I'm either at work, you know, getting hounded with questions and clients, all that kind of stuff, or I'm at home and I've got 2 kids and running around and all this stuff. And so one of my mentors told me that, you know, you're going to burn yourself out and not be great at your job and not be great at being a dad and a husband. And then everything's going to go to hell unless you take time for yourself. And so he said, you need to pick a 4-hour time during the work week that you have you time. And he said, you can do whatever you want with that time, you know, whether it's you know, you want to, you know, you're denying all meetings, you're denying all Slack calls, all calls, whatever. And, you know, you can just work and get things done without being bothered. You know, if you want to go pick up your kids early from school and take them to the park and do that, like you can do that. If you want to go play golf, go play golf. And I've taken a lot of the play golf advice. But Friday afternoons, it's kind of a good reset for me, kind of between the hecticness of the work week and then the weekends, which is always crazy, just with two kids running around and figuring out how to entertain them for an entire day and make sure you don't, you know, lose your mind. So that's been really helpful as well. I'm starting to become a big believer in sort of the 4-day work week, which is, I know, gaining a lot of traction around certain companies. And for our industry, I don't think, because we service other businesses, I don't think that we'll ever be able to do that. But I'm like much more in favor of working, you know, 4 10-to-12-hour days, which I do. And then Fridays, I kind of work, you know, 3 or 4 hours in the morning and then kind of, you know, call it quits by, you know, noon or 1 o'clock or so. So I think it's really important. I like to take vacations. Some people brag about, you know, I don't ever take vacations or whatever. I'm like, that's just unhealthy. So yeah, I'm a big believer in a framework called the Core Four that I do. And it's all about body, being, balance, and business. And so all four of those things work together. So you need to take care of your body, you know, whether you're eating the right stuff, working out, there's, you know, different things you're supposed to do within it. You got to take care of your being, so your mind. If you're not, you know, working on your mental health, working on, you know, meditation is a big part of what we do. Gratitude journaling is a big part of what we do. And then your relationships, your balance. So making sure your relationship with your friends, your family, your significant others, your kids are all on track. And then only if all three of those things are in working order, then can you be good at what you do for your work, for business. So it's kind of a system where all four of those things play together. And I'm a big believer in, if one of them's out of whack, then you're probably not going to be feeling great about yourself. So you got to make sure that everything's working in harmony.
Right. Earlier you were mentioning that the money you make when you're working is not the main thing to focus on, but it is one thing to consider. So mm-hmm. for example, like people invest 11 years or more to become a doctor and they're compensated pretty well. So in general, without going to specifics, what can one expect this profession to compensate in comparison to other professions?
Yeah. So I would say generally, and, you know, inflationary pressures and cost of living in Dallas has certainly gone up a lot. So I would say starting salaries have kind of been, at least in our business, been going up with that. But I would say kind of starting out right out of school, you know, expect to make anywhere between like $35,000-$45,000 a year, you know, kind of all included. And, you know, obviously benefits are very different from company to company. You know, for instance, our company, we cover 100% of healthcare premiums, which, you know, is, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 a year on top of your salary that people oftentimes forget that we're doing and don't appreciate as much. Yeah, I would say kind of, you know, that's a pretty good starting range, really, for anything: account service, design, copywriter, you know, a digital person, what have you. And then really, I would say where you can top out is almost limitless. Certainly if you're in my position as a business owner, right? You know, obviously the better our company does, the more I'm compensated. And, you know, and our bonus structures and all that kind of stuff. But I would say it's, you know, by year 5, 6, 7, 8, somewhere around that range, you should be getting pretty close to six figures. You know, probably in the low six figures. And then it really just kind of depends on the path you want to take after that. If you're working for a smaller agency, you're probably going to have more opportunity to get things like equity in a company, become a partner in a company. But working as an employee, you probably won't, you'll probably top out at a lower number than you might at a, you know, huge, you know, conglomerate controlled company. Whereas, you know, senior executives there might be making, you know, $800,000 to $1 million. Yeah, there's probably not going to be anybody, hopefully me one day, but probably not going to be anybody in this company making $800 to $1 million at any point. So, but I would say that, you know, it just depends. You know, we like to kid that, like, if you wanted to make a lot of money, you shouldn't have gone into advertising. It's just kind of an old joke. But there are definitely really good money making opportunities in this business if you work hard and you find the right opportunities, for sure. But yeah, I think that, there are definitely other roles where you can make more money, I think, earlier in your career, but you might top out a certain level. I think of like, if you're a real estate broker, if you're a real estate office broker or something like that, I think you can start off, making closer to probably $75,000 to $100,000 in your first couple of years out of school. But I think that at some point there's more of a limit to kind of what you can do there. Especially if you're working for a big company, but, I think that you can make a very good life for yourself in advertising. I've seen some of their houses, so, so you can do very well in this business, but, I think again, just not quite like the music business. But there's a lot of young, hungry people looking to get into our industry because it is a fun, sexy industry. I think because there's a lot more competition, you can kind of afford to, pay people less, kind of as they're getting out of school. And then, but if you work hard and do the right things, you can make a lot of money.
Earlier, you were talking about sort of culture and values. And that's what you value in your company. And also, one quick question on that. What do you use to define like a successful entrepreneur? You're talking about mentors earlier and that the different values that you look up to in them. So, yeah.
To define a successful entrepreneur, is that the question? I think a successful entrepreneur outside of, kind of obvious things, growing a company, revenue, things like that. But really like what I love, and it sounds kind of cliche, but what I love about being an entrepreneur and being a business owner is being able to create opportunities for other people. So, whether that's, we have to create a new position, we can hire somebody and give them a job. That's one thing. But I love being able to call somebody in and say, we do our performance reviews usually in October and saying, hey, you're getting a raise, or you're getting a raise of this much money. To me, that's like the most rewarding thing, because we can only do that when our company is growing and those people have helped our company grow. And so it's only right to be able to compensate them. And so being able to provide the life that people want to live through monetary means, through happiness, how they approach or how they feel at work, how that makes them feel about their day, how they get value out of what we do, the friendships they make, the camaraderie that we have at work. To me, that's really kind of the most, rewarding part of being an entrepreneur. And I think that if you are an entrepreneur and solely focused on making money for yourself, then you're probably not doing it right. But really kind of by helping others and getting them to where they want to be, ultimately you'll see the fruits of their labor and your labor, in the long run. And that'll help you achieve what you want to achieve from a financial perspective. But you got to take care of others first and make sure that they're getting what they need and what they want.
Just wrapping it up in a few last few questions. This question is about like the cliche statement, like follow your passion. Everyone's heard that and people aren't really sure like what to do when someone says follow your passion, unless they've got it figured out, which is only a select few. What is your opinion about this statement and how important do you think passion is for a career?
I think having passion about what you do is one of the most important things to being successful in what you do. That being said, follow your passion. I don't like that phrase because if I was to follow my passion, I would, be going to concerts every day and not really working or on the golf course every day. And unfortunately, I can't make money on the golf course as much as I would love to. So I don't think follow your passion, but I think find a passion is, I think, a better way to look at it. But yeah, you have to enjoy what you're doing. And back to, kind of the money question, one of my second or third job out of school, they offered me double what I was making before that. And I was like, man, I'm making so much money. This is great. This is awesome. And I hated my job. It was miserable. I was there for 6 months, but it was like every day, just like dreaded coming to work. I would like wake up and be like, should I try to call in sick today? Should I say that I have a flat tire so I can come in late? Like I was trying to think of any excuse not to go to this place, even though they were paying me, double what I'd been previously making. So that was a good lesson for me early in my career that money is very important. You need to make money and making good money is can help you do a lot of things in life, but it's certainly not the only thing. And if you wake up miserable every day and going to your job, there's almost no amount of money that can cure that. But yeah, I think you have to be passionate about what you do, whether you're in real estate or a doctor or an attorney. If you don't really like what you do, you're going to be miserable, and that's just not any kind of fun. So, you know, if you want to be a doctor, you know, you had to be prepared to go through 11 years of school and internships and residencies and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I assume you really have to like being a doctor in order to go through all that stuff. Right. So I would say finding a passion and a way to make money doing it is a better way than saying like finding your passion. Because sometimes your passions can't make you money. But there are things you can be passionate about that can make you money.
And in conclusion, so the last question, do you have any final advice for high schoolers, not necessarily thinking about going into advertising or marketing, but just in general?
Yeah, I would say, thinking about your career at this stage of your life is important. Something I wish I probably had done more of, or at least in a serious fashion, but don't take it too seriously. Believe me, you will be 35 in a blink of an eye. When you're 18, 17, whatever, those are some of the best years of your life. And they're great opportunities to have fun. You don't have a whole lot of responsibilities. So enjoy the moment. Don't focus so much on the future. You know, if you keep thinking about the future, you'll never be able to enjoy today or whatever that quote is, right? But enjoy today. Think about, you know, your friends, the time you have at St. Mark's, the time you have with them. Make that stuff count. There's always going to be time for you to, you know, focus on your career and get serious, but you know, you're really kind of entering the last, you know, 4 to 5 years of your life where you can kind of not be that serious and it's not really that punitive to you. So I think it's trying to find a good balance of, you know, weighing your future and preparing for that, but also making sure that you're not doing so much that you're forgetting about what you're able to experience today and enjoying, you know, your late teens and your early 20s, because those really are, there's some really fun times. And if you get too caught up in, you know, what you're going to be and what you're going to do, you can miss that. So I would say just kind of try to strike that right balance.
Thank you so much for taking time to address these questions.
Awesome. Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Also, please visit pathfinder101.com for more content. If the blog or podcast added some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks again for your time, and have a great rest of your day.